right. So here we are. We invite you to take out your Christchurch notes. They're in your worship program. You'll need a pen or a pencil from the seat back in front of you. We're going to begin by doing what we do every single solitary week during this series. We're going to begin with our foundational scripture, words of Jesus from Matthew chapter 11, verse 28. Chapter 11, verse 28 of the Gospel of Matthew. We're going to read it together. Are you ready? Here we go. Jesus said, "Come to me, all who are tired from carrying heavy loads, and I will give you rest." One more time. Jesus said, "Come to me, all who are tired from carrying heavy loads, and I will give you rest." You know, we're in a series that I'm calling Sick and Tired, based on a series I preached almost 8 years ago. And the premise of the series is this, that you and I can find ourselves chronically sick and tired because we have talked ourselves into believing that life without margin and balance, write those two words in, margin and balance, due to unhealthy and unprioritized loads, which are our priorities, right? We think that's normal. We believe that living life without margin and balance due to unhealthy and unprioritized loads is somehow normal. And folks, it just is not normal. I mean, due to the dysfunction of our culture, we have bought into the destructive notion that living an unhealthy, overstressed, overburdened, emotionally empty, spiritually depleted life is normal, and there's just nothing we can do about it. I mean, after all, it's just the way it is. That's what we've talked ourselves into. In fact, I want you to know that I think that that's one of the great lies of Satan. One of the great lies of our enemy is that that all of that is normal. In fact, he's been whispering that load of dreck in your ears so long that we've all bought into it. We believe it. We think there's nothing that we can do about it. And that's exactly what our enemy wants you to believe. In fact, there is nothing that gives Satan more pleasure than destroying your relationships. Your relationship with God, your relationship with your spouse, your relationship with your children, and even a relationship with yourself. He wants to destroy all of that. In fact, that's why this teaching is so critical. That's why what we're about to hear is so critical, because that's what he wants to do, is to destroy our relationship. And let me tell you, when you're living constantly, chronically, without margin, without balance, due to these unhealthy and unprioritized loads, and we think that this is normal, it destroys our relationships. And breaking free from that death grip of being chronically sick and tired will allow you to live a margined, balanced life. Now listen, so that you can live out the things in life that matter most. That's why. So you can live out the things that matter most in your life. Things that you know that are the timeless, unchanging priorities that you have. But we don't have time for that. It gets pushed to the side when our life is unmargined and unbalanced. So today, what I'm going to talk about is what some authors have called the great equalizer. You know what the great equalizer is? Time. That's what they say. The great equalizer is time. It's the great equalizer of us all. Let me ask you this question. Have you ever heard of the rule of 168? Anybody heard of that rule? No? Oh, a couple of you have. 168. The rule of 168. What's the rule of 168? The rule of 168 says this. It doesn't matter if you're male or female, or you're rich or poor, or red or yellow, black and white, every last one of us has 168 hours in a week. Every last one of us, no more, no less. There, you can't buy any more. You can't give any of it away. You're everybody on earth, whether you're in the United States or in Kenya, has 168 hours a week. The question is, how do you manage it? How do you manage those 168 hours? How do you manage your time? That's the real question that's before us. You know, sometimes time flies, right? Sometimes it crawls, but let me tell you, it always passes us by. We mark time, we save time, we bide time, we waste time, we race against the time. We measure it incessantly with a precision that borders on the obsessive, right? I mean, we're obsessed with time, and yet we never seem to have enough of it. Time. Think about this. I was reading this week, that in the year 1790, only 10% of Americans actually had a clock in their home. 10% of Americans had a clock in their home in 1790. In fact, if you were one of the ones who had a clock in your home in 1790, guess what? It didn't even have a minute hand. It only had an hour hand marking the hour. In fact, wristwatches and alarm clocks didn't even exist until the end of the 18th century. But yet, we are absolutely obsessed with time. And today, we are overburdened and exhausted and overstressed and overcommitted. And we tend to view time as our enemy. We view it as our enemy. Now, a moment of true confession for you. You know, when my father passed away, I was only 16 years old. He died at 46. I was 16. And I confess to you that event in my life, the passing of my father, really skewed my understanding of time. Skewed my understanding of time. What do I mean by that? Well, I convinced myself that I too was going to die at 46 years old. Like father, like son. I truly believed that at 46, I was going to be dead. And so what ended up happening, matter of fact, when I proposed marriage to Rosemary, I said, you know, I'm probably going to die at 46. That was one of my lines. I am a hopeless romantic, you can tell. But she still said yes. Maybe the insurance was attractive or something, but she still said yes. But get back to the point. 46 years old, I believed that I needed to accomplish everything that I hoped for and dreamed by the time that I was 46. I believed that, and I raced toward it. And the problem is that when I finally got to 46 and I was still alive, I was burned out. And I mean, candle at both ends burned out. I had nothing left to give. Nothing left. I had, in order to get there, I had to take shortcuts in every area of my life, whether it be professionally, emotionally, physically, and I was worn out. And my actions didn't just hurt me, but it hurt those around me. And it wasn't until when I was 47 years old, maybe it was 48, 47 or 48, that I really began to understand time differently and began to understand that time really, truly is a gift that God has given me. You know, for much of my life, I had acted as if time was a commodity, that is, something to be saved and earned and invested. And I didn't treat it as a gift, and frankly, it messed me up. It messed me up big time. So if you don't get anything else I say today, I want you to get this one thing, and that is that time is a gift. It is a gift from God, a gift that God has given each and every last one of us. It is something to be treasured. It is something to be enjoyed. And I will just tell you, I missed this for a great deal of my life. You know, if you think about it, you know, if you can just take one step toward realizing that time is that the time you've been given to live is a gift from God, it may be the most countercultural decision that you will ever make in your life. If you really believe that time is a gift, I mean, really believe it, it will be the most countercultural decision because our culture pushes us in a totally different direction. It makes us want to view time as our enemy. But if you can get to a place where you say, you know, time is a gift given by God, I'm grateful for it, I want to use it better, I want to enjoy it rather than fight against it. I mean, other than your decision to follow Jesus, that may be the greatest decision that you make for your life and for your heart. That time is a gift. I mean, think about this. Have you ever noticed that time doesn't always cooperate with your plans? Have you ever noticed that? You know, when you want it to go fast, what does it do? It seems to go slow, right? When you want it to go slow, what happens? It tends to go fast. I mean, do you remember when you were in school and you in sitting in class and you were just waiting for that minute hand to finally get to the hour so the bell would ring so that you could get out of class? I mean, it just moved so slowly, didn't it? You remember that? You know, even today, you know, when Pastor Tony drags me around Southern Fairfax County on our four-mile run every morning, let me tell you, that clock moves slowly. You know, I am huffing and puffing and praying that maybe a stray meteor would come swooping down out of the sky to take me out of that misery. Yet, when things are fun, what happens? Man, a lot of time just flies. And you're thinking, it can't be over already, can it? You know? Listen, folks, you know what the Bible teaches us here is that our time on earth is a trust and a test. Listen to that. A trust and a test. God says, I have entrusted certain things into your hands. I have entrusted time and money and talents and relationships and intelligence and even the freedom to choose. Everything you have in life is a gift from God. And God says, I am going to trust you with these gifts while you are right here on earth. You know, that three times in the Bible, that Scripture tells us that those who manage their time well are considered wise. Those who manage their time well. This is what the Bible tells us. In fact, I've got one of those verses for you right here. Paul was writing to the church at Ephesus here in chapter 5, verses 15 and 16 of Ephesians. Check this out. It says this, so be careful how you live. Don't live like, wow, what's that word? Fools. Don't live like fools, but like those who are wise. Make most of every opportunity in these evil days. You know, Paul didn't seem to mince any words right here, right? Don't live like what? Fools. Don't live like a fool. Make the most of every opportunity. In other words, don't squander the gift of time that God has given to you, but manage it like those who are wise. In fact, it's the rule of 168, isn't it? That's what he's talking about. The rule of 168, right? I mean, God has a lot to say about the way he designed us to live and use this gift of time. Let me tell you about that. First of all, what I want you to know is this, that time management is actually this, life management. Time management is actually life management. I mean, have you ever thought about that? I think this is pretty profound, actually, that life management is actually time management. In fact, look what Jesus said right here. Gospel of Luke chapter 21. Jesus said, don't spend all of your time thinking about eating or drinking or worrying about life. If you do, the final day will suddenly catch you like a trap. Time management is life management. Folks, when you manage your time well, you're actually controlling and managing and guiding and directing your life. Now, why is it? Because time is your life. Listen to that. Time is your life. I mean, the moment your time is up, your earthly life is up, right? I mean, think about that. So the question is, you know, what are you doing to spend your life, or are you going to spend your life and with margin and with balance so that you can pursue the things in life that matter most? I mean, what are the limits and the boundaries that you're going to put around the things? Listen, what are the limits and boundaries that you're going to put around the things you have to do in order for you to do some things that you want to do? What are those boundaries? What are those limits around the things you have to do in order to give you the time to do some of the things that you really want to do? You know, folks, please hear me say this. You know, talking about time management for me, the poster child who had not done it very well for the majority of his life, this is one of the hardest things that I've ever had to do, is to talk about this stuff. Because, you know, every now and again, you know, Satan is whispering in my ear too, you know, saying, you know, you're really a hypocrite to talk about all this. But the reality is, I have learned so much more about how to manage my time as a gift from God rather than that which is to be my enemy. You know, I'll give you another quick little self-confession here. 29 years ago today, Rosemary and I were in San Antonio, Texas. We were living there, in fact, 29 years ago, and at the church where I was the senior associate pastor, we were having people come in from all over the country, and we were doing this church management seminar, and I had a major role in that seminar. People coming in from Missouri and Kansas and all around Texas and mostly around the Midwest were coming to San Antonio to my church in order to talk about church management and how best to manage the church. And like I said, I had a major role in that. Well, the problem was that our Rosemary on that day was in the hospital to give birth to our firstborn child. Today is Taylor's birthday, 29 years ago. So we were in the hospital, and we had been there since the middle of the night, and nothing was happening. She wasn't getting on with it, you know, and I had this, you know, major presentation to make at the church. And so about this time, it was really around 10 o'clock in the morning, I said to Rosemary, I said, you know what? I think I can leave here and go to the church, give this thing, and get back before our child is born. And she raised up in the bed. And with a look that I have never seen from that day to this, said, "You will not leave me here." I told you, I viewed time quite differently. And, you know, it was, I would have missed the birth of our firstborn child if I had left that hospital that day 29 years ago today. You know, and I've listened to your stories too. You know, I'm on my 28th year here at Christ Church, and I've heard your stories. I've been with you being in, you know, some of you being in tears because you feel like there's so much to do and so little time to do it, and because of all of that, pieces of life are failing. And that's what happens when we try to do too much. And when we allow the urgent to push the important off of our calendars. You know, we do that kind of stuff. We allow the urgent to take precedent over the important. And what it ends up doing is it makes pieces of our life that are truly important start to break off. And they get neglected and pushed to the side and forgotten. I was talking to someone actually yesterday. I was out, if you read my letter this week, I got 20 yards of topsoil delivered on my driveway, and that pile has been growing. I think it's got yeast in it or something. But I put a whole lot of it down on the front yard, and someone was driving by in front of my house and happened to see me and stopped, and we started talking about, I was asking about how the kids are and now that they're adults and so forth, and this person said, you know, I have to confess that with the hours that my husband and I have worked, frankly, John, the last thing that we wanted to do is get out of bed on Sunday morning and bring our children to church. And then she said, this is a quote, and now we're paying for that. Because our children want nothing to do with God. You know, that's sad, isn't it? And she said, I take full responsibility for that. And we're paying for it. You know, it's all about a personal decision about doing whatever it is that you need to do in order to create some margin and some balance in your life. According to a Pew Research Center poll, 68% of people say that having enough free time to do the things that they want to do is a very significant priority in their lives. 68%. 55% said being married was a high priority. 52% said doing volunteer work and giving to charity was a high priority. And 12% said that being wealthy was a high priority. But the way you manage your time directly impacts the way that you manage your life. So here's the second thing that I think that's important for us to understand. And this is a little tough to actually hear and digest, I think. And that's this. You know, the problem that we have is not a lack of time. And I want us to hear that. We all have 168 hours a week. Whether you're here or somewhere else around the world, everybody, red and yellow, black and white, male or female, doesn't matter. We all have 168 hours. It's the rule of 168. So it's not the fact that we have a lack of time. Here's our problem. Our problem is my choice. The choices that I make, my choices. The problem is not the amount of time we have. The problem is, what are the choices that I make? Problem is that you know, we think the problem is that we don't have enough time, but the real problem is that we don't use the 168 wisely. Sometimes we make poor choices, and these poor choices cause stress and pressure in our life. You know, as I said, we all have the same number of hours in a week. We don't all have the same amount of money. You know, it's not true about money. It is true about time, but it's not true about money. Some of us have more money, some of us have less money, and some of us are in the middle between it all. But when it comes to time, everybody on the planet has the exact same amount. So that brings me to this, you know, which is started thinking about it. The people who are more effective than you are, the people who get more done than you are, well, what's the difference? They have the same amount of time that you've got. Difference is the choices that they make on how they use their time wisely.
In fact, the Bible says this in Ecclesiastes 8:6. Check it out. It says, hey, yes, there is a right time and way for everything. Even though, unfortunately, what's that say? We miss it for the most part, right? There's a right time and right way for everything. Although, we miss it for the most part. Wise old King Solomon. You didn't know he knew us, right? But there it is right there that he wrote that so many years ago. He's saying selection is the name of the game. The way you select what your priorities are is the name of the game. Pressure is caused by poor choices, not from time itself. But that's the bad news. Here's the good news. The good news is this, that time management can be learned. It can be learned. We can learn how to manage our time wisely. We can learn how to make better choices. We can do all of that. It is a possibility to make that happen. In fact, David in Psalm 90, verse 12 said this. He said, teach us to number our days and recognize how few they are. Help us to spend them as we should. We are able to learn this stuff. Circle the words, teach us, please. Circle those two words, teach us. You know, you can be taught how to be more effective with your time, and that's exactly what I'm going to do in the next couple of minutes. And I'm going to do this kind of quickly, but I want you to get this, and then you can look it up later. And that is, first, is I want you to apply what's called the Pareto, P-E-R-E-T-O principle, Pareto principle. Who knows what the Pareto principle is? How, you know? That's it. Say it louder. Esperanza, the 80-20 rule. Write that in. That's Pareto principle, named after the Italian economist who came up with that, is the 80-20 rule. The 80-20 rule. What is the 80-20 rule? It says that if you have 10 things on your list, there are two of them that will give you a greater bang for the buck than if you did the other eight. 80-20 rule, that if there are 10 things on your list, two of them are really, really, really important. More will be accomplished and a greater impact made in doing those two things than if you did all 10 of them and did not do them well. In fact, Paul says this. He said, you say I have the right to do anything, but not everything's helpful. Again, you say, I have the right to do anything, but not everything builds us up. That's right. Not everything. Listen, here's the point. Not everything is of equal value. Not everything on your to-do list is of equal value. Remember, it's all about choices, it's about priority, it's about being effective with your time. In fact, Vince Lombardi, that famous football coach, used to say, he said, every football game is made in, or won or lost in four or five plays. Every football game is won in four or five plays. But the key to great coaching is to know what four or five plays there are, and when to use them. That's the key, is using that 80-20 rule. Do the ones that matter most. All right, here's the next one. All right, don't put this up until I'm ready. All right, so use the two middle letters of the alphabet. What are they? N-O. N-O spells? Come on, people. You know what N-O spells. N-O spells what? Yes, use the two middle letters of the alphabet. Probably the greatest time saver, time management tool ever invented. You know, once the Israelites were over on the other side of the Red Sea, They were on the Sinai Peninsula. They were camped there. Moses had received the Ten Commandments. They were still there, and Moses was trying to arbitrate every single solitary issue that would come among the people, the Israelites. Every argument, every disagreement, all this stuff was going on, and he was taking full responsibility. And finally, God said to Moses this. He said, you'll only tire yourself out and the people with you too,
for the work is too heavy for you. You can't do it all yourself. And so what did he do? He told Moses then, he said, find some people that you trust, train them up, and let them arbitrate these disagreements among the Israelites. You can't do it all. And that's what he says to us today. You can't do everything. God is saying to you right now, you can't do everything if you're going to do it well. If you want to do the things that matter most in your life, you cannot do everything. So the question is, let me ask it, what are the things in your life that you need to stop doing today? What are the things in your life right now that you need to stop doing? You got to figure that out. They may be a lot of fun. They're not necessarily bad, but it's just not what you need to do right now. Here's some practical stuff. You need to group similar tasks together. Group similar tasks together. You know, you will save more time, you'll save more energy if you make your phone calls back to back, or if you have to run errands, that you do them all at one time. You will save time, you will save energy. It will be extremely helpful to you if you'll do that. From Proverbs 17:24 says this, an intelligent person aims at wise action, but a fool starts off in many directions. Well, absolutely true. If you try to do things that aren't related to each other all across the day, you will spend more time and more energy than if you were to group those things together. Couple last two things very quickly. First, maintain a, put it up, relaxed attitude. Maintain a relaxed attitude. Because the more time you get uptight, it takes time away. Worry and stress takes time away from your life. In fact, once again, Proverbs, wise old King Solomon, a relaxed attitude does what? Say it. Lengthens one's life. I like that. I like that. Now that I have outlived my dad, you know, by 4,651 days. A relaxed attitude lengthens one's life. You need that verse this week, and I do too. We want to lengthen our lives. Stop getting so uptight about everything. You know, I'll never forget, a pastor told me this one time. He said, you know, John, stop taking yourself too seriously and start taking God more seriously. I tell you, that's profound. When we take ourselves too seriously, everything is about us and it's got to happen right here, right now, and all this kind of stuff. I tell you, it wears on you. It'll tear your body to pieces. Here's the last thing. And give God first place. You want your time to be a gift from God, give God first place. Here's a biblical principle. You know, whatever it is that you want God to bless, you got to put him in first. If you want him to bless your marriage, you got to put him first in your marriage. If you want him to bless your business, you got to put him first in your business. If you want him to bless your finances, you need to tithe. You need to put your finances into, put God in your finances. If you want him to bless your time, you got to give God the first part of your life. It's a biblical principle, and you can't get around that. It's the way God designed us. You know, give him first place. Let me just give you the scripture, and then we'll pray. Reverence for the Lord adds hours to each day. How about that? Do you know that was in there? Reverence for the Lord adds hours to every day. You need to do that. I need to do it. We need to reverence the Lord. Some time alone with God every day will give you more time than it takes for you to do it. I don't understand it. It just does. So we're going to close, and I'm going to say this. You know, that for some of you, you've been coming here to Christ Church for months or weeks or years.
but have never yet still stepped across the line to give God first place in your life. You know, there's no time to do it like now. Today is the day. Now is the time to step across that line. You've thought about it and you said, yeah, you know, I know it sounds good. I need the forgiveness of God. I want to go to heaven. I want a purpose for my life. You just haven't gotten around to it. I say it again. Today is the time to make it right. Let's bow our heads and close our eyes as we pray. You know, if you've never opened your life to Jesus and begun a relationship with Him, I'm not talking about a religion here, but a relationship, would you pray this prayer in the silence of your own heart? Say something like this. You know, dear God, you know, I've been putting this off for a long time, and I've just been delaying stepping across the line and opening up my life to You. So today, no more procrastinating, no more delays. I want to do it now. So as much as I know how, Jesus, I ask You to come into my life with all of my fears and all of my doubts and all of my questions. I'm not sure that I understand it all, but I'm going to say yes to You. And I'm doing so the very best way I know how. I want to learn to love You. And I want to learn to trust You. I want a home in heaven with You. I want Your purpose for my life today. So, Lord, thank You for being patient with me. Today I say yes to You. And it's in Your name I pray.